Good morning. Welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, which we affectionately call WUF. So if you hear us say WUF, we are talking about this place and these people, our place that we have not been able to gather, but we still have a place together. And so thank you for being with us this morning for this live worship. I am the Reverend Leslie Becknell Marks, and I am one of the community ministers affiliated with West Hills, and I am grateful to be part of this community and to be in partnership with the Reverend Tracy Springberry as she leads this congregation. You are welcome here. We are glad that you are here, whether this is your first time coming to WUF or your 1,000th time coming. I am doing a service today called Beloved Community, Sweet or Savory. And for some of you, this might seem familiar because back on February 7th, I attempted to deliver this service. And in fact, I did deliver everything up until the sermon. But then I hit a button that I was not meant to hit, and I preached away into the void, and none of you all heard it. So we are here for a redo, and I have refreshed and brought in new material for the beginning of the service, and I will give you the sermon that I intended to give then, well, that I in fact did give, that only my husband heard in our living room. So I am glad that we are here together. I am going to light our chalice with words from Kimberly Ann Tomczak Carlson. And so you began seeking a beloved community, a people that does not put fences around love, a community that holds its arms open to possibilities of love, a heart home to nourish your soul and share your gifts. Welcome home. Welcome to worship, and I will now light the chalice, although the small candle that I'm using to light the chalice has burned down to a tiny place that I can't use, so now I am forced to use the big scary lighter. Here we go. And now, from backstage, here enters my husband Adam, to light the chalice. But I think you can't even see him because he knows how to use the lighter. Thank you all for your patience. We are now going to sing the Spirit of Life together.
Love is Our Greatest Purpose by J. E. Abernathy, Jr. We affirm that love is our greatest purpose. Accepting one another is the truest form of faithful living. The search for truth is our constant star. We pledge our hearts, minds, and hands to challenge injustice with courage, to find hope in times of fear, and to live out our Unitarian Universalist values every day as a beloved community. Thus do we covenant with each other and with this, all that is sacred in life.
Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around is a great song because it's an African-American spiritual, which is an exciting tempo, and it has a sense of building from a sort of a walking pace to a high note. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching down to freedom land. It tells a story anyone can relate to about how you have to keep on working, you have to keep on walking to get to where you're going. It's a wonderful story, and it has the inspiration of the Black civil rights movement behind it.
our time for all ages, I'm going to tell you a story from the civil rights era, which we just saw some images from that as we listened to our choristers sing, and I'm hoping some of you all were singing along. And this is about nonviolence, which is the source of the term beloved community. And nonviolence means loving everyone, not just the people you like or can you relate to or the people who vote the same way you do. And it also means that you stand by what you believe, that you answer the call towards love and justice for all people being respected and cared for. And some people stood up for justice by sitting down where they weren't welcome at a lunch counter that was reserved for white people only. And that was the way it was in the South in the middle of the 20th century in the 1950s and 60s. So we're going to start our story in a place called Greensboro, and four college-age young black men who were in, at this point it was like a Woolworths, a place where you could buy things, as well as there was a lunch counter where you could order some food, kind of like a diner. And generally, the way that it had to work was that the white people could sit and relax and eat their food, whereas black people ordered from a stand-up window and had to take their food away. And so these four young men were there, and they could smell the ham cooking, and they could hear the soda fountain and the milkshake machine going and the low chatter of people talking. And they decided that they were going to do this. They were going to cross this invisible line that separated the shopping area that was open to everyone and that dining area where blacks were not allowed to go. And this took a lot of courage because they knew that doing this could generate a really big reaction that might get them hurt, might get them arrested. But they did it. They went forward and they took their seats. And it took a few moments for anyone to notice, but these young men said that they felt the change inside themselves immediately. Almost instantaneously, after sitting down on a simple, dumb stool, I felt so relieved. I felt so clean, and I felt as though I had gained a little bit of my manhood by that simple act. As they were sitting there, they politely asked to order some food, and they were refused. And the white waiter said, you need to go over to the stand-up counter and get your order to go. And by this point, people were noticing what was happening. And in fact, there was no sound in the dining area. Everybody was hushed. They were looking and wondering. And then an older black woman who worked there came and said, please follow the rules, maybe worried about her job or worried about these young men's safety. Next, the store manager came over and said, you need to rethink your actions before you get in trouble. And they kept sitting there. And eventually a police officer came and started to walk behind them. And he had that thing called a billy club, like a big stick that officers have. And he was tapping it on his hand with this kind of implied threat that instead of tapping this on my hand, I could be hitting you with this. But the four of them just kept sitting still. And the police officer, after he walked back and forth quite a few times, left because he didn't know what to do. And so those four men did not get served, but they made their point, and they got into the paper. And in another city, Nashville, Tennessee, there were students, college students, and activists who had been training to do this. These four men in Greensboro just kind of decided to do it on their own. But these people were ready. They had been planning and practicing. They had been promising that whatever happens, I'm not going to be violent. I'm not going to yell or scream or anything. And they were inspired by what happened in Greensboro. And they're like, now is the time. So they had many people go on a Saturday when they were sure to be noticed. And they sat at the lunch counters and they were quiet and respectful, very well dressed. And the store ended up closing the lunch counter. They said for public safety reasons. And the next Saturday they came back and they closed the lunch counter. The third Saturday they were warned that the police were going to stand back and let some people beat them up and then arrest them. And that is what happened. And after they arrested the first group, a whole nother group of college students came and sat down. And the police were like, and then they arrested that group, and a whole nother group of students came and sat down. And they stayed in jail. They didn't take their bail. And people around the country and even around the world began to notice. And then they boycotted the stores downtown, and then people were kind of afraid to go downtown. So that Easter, there was no spring shopping, no big, oh, let's get in the mood for Easter. And then soon after that, they had a peaceful march to City Hall, and they asked the mayor, is it morally right that people are treated this way? And he had to say no. And they said, do you agree that the lunch counter should be desegregated? And he said, yes. And so the lunch counters were desegregated, and slowly, slowly, more and more parts of the town, like movie theaters, were desegregated. And here's the hardest part of the story for me. All these activists, these people who had worked so hard and trained so long for this, didn't make any big announcements about, we won, we did it, we desegregated. They didn't have a big press, because in nonviolence, the idea is to seek justice and reconciliation with others, not victory over them. So instead of saying, ha, 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 we won, which would only generate more animosity from the people who were beaten, they just desegregated. And that's another piece of nonviolence, that we are working to be together, not working to be one up or one down. So that is our story for today. And our reading is from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And we are actually going to hear his voice as he started march in a bridge over a river in Selma and made his way all the way to Montgomery, Alabama. Let's watch.
They told us we wouldn't get here. There were those who said that we would get here only over that dead body.
Well, that's
Yes. All the world today knows that we are here and we are standing before the forces of power in the state of Alabama saying we ain't going to let nobody turn us around.
That's right.
Only normalcy that we will settle for is the normalcy that recognizes the dignity and worth of all of God's children. The only normalcy that we will settle for is a normalcy that allows judgment to run down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. The only normalcy that we will settle for is the normalcy of brotherhood, the normalcy of true peace, the normalcy of justice. So I plead with you this afternoon as we go ahead, remain committed to nonviolence. Our aim must never be to defeat or humiliate the white man, but to win his friendship and understanding. We must come to see that the end we seek is a society at peace with itself, a society that can live with its conscience. That will be a day not of the white man, not of the black man. That will be the day of man as man.
Stood naked and bewildered at the evil people do. And up upon the hill there is a tale, son, that tells the story of what darkness waits if we leave the light behind. So don't tell me hate is ever right or God's will. These are the wheels we put in motion, ourselves and the whole world weeps and is weeping still. Though we're shaken, I still believe the best of what we all can be, and the only peace this world will know can only come from love. I am a voice that's calling out across great divide, and I am only just one person that feels they have to try. And the questions fall like trees of dust and rise like prayers above, but the only word is courage and the only answer love. So don't tell me hate is ever right or God's will. These are the wheels we put in motion, ourselves and the whole world weeps and is weeping still. Though we're shaken, I still believe the best of what we all can be, and the only peace this world will know can only come from love.
Please join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, we are here together, weeping and shaken, confused and bewildered by the evil people do. Decades after civil rights, we are still working to preserve the rights of all people to vote, as legislators across the nation attempt to limit and contain the votes of people who disagree with them. May we bring voices calling out across the great divide. We are weeping and shaken, confused and bewildered by the horrifying violence in Atlanta. May this be yet another step towards our deeper commitment. May we open the door into healing, into learning, into justice. May we serve hate no more. Together, may we learn to love our neighbors, love our enemies, love ourselves. Help us still believe the best of what we all can be. Help us create beloved community through courage and love. Amen and blessed be. And now we will get to hear from our Woof choristers one more time, and this is something that they have created for us just this month, A Bridge Over Troubled Waters.
I'll be your bridge over troubled water. When you're down, I will carry you like a bridge for troubled water. I will lay me down. When you're
come, darkness come,
and pain is gone.
Beloved community, we need it when we're down and out, someone to comfort us when the pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water. And that's often what we think of when we hear the phrase beloved community, you know, us with our beloveds, with the kindred spirits, the people who share experiences, share values. And it is very sweet to be in that kind of beloved community. But the bridge over troubled waters that is perhaps more aligned with the origin of this phrase, beloved community, is that bridge in Selma, where Martin Luther King and so many others started their march to Montgomery. That bridge in Selma, where the Bloody Sunday events happened. Beloved community is a term that was first coined in the early days of the 20th century by a philosopher theologian named Josiah Royce, who founded the Fellowship of Reconciliation. And this was a group of pacifist Christians who created this at the outbreak of World War I as a way of working towards peace, even while so many countries were at war. And Martin Luther King became connected with the Fellowship of Reconciliation during the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955. And James Lawson from the Fellowship of Reconciliation is the trainer who came to Nashville to train the people for those lunch counter sit-ins that we heard about in the Time for All Ages. And James Lawson worked on the Freedom Rides and was in that march from Selma to Montgomery. So beloved community is tied up in this vision of nonviolence, the idea of caring for everyone's needs, not just the people that we like, not just the people we agree with. So I think the key difference is to think about, are we committed to caring for the needs of all? Or committing to caring for the needs of all who deserve it. So I think about Gandhi and his deep commitment to freeing India from British colonial rule and his deep care and affection for the British colonizers, the deep respect that he showed them, even as he was telling them and working very actively to get them out. I think about it with the end of the lunch counters, that there wasn't a big celebration of victory, but that there was a slow desegregation and integration to try to bring about reconciliation. There was a commitment card to join Martin Luther King's nonviolent civil rights movements, and you had to pledge. The commitment card read, I hereby pledge myself, my person and body to the nonviolent movement. Therefore, I will keep the following 10 commandments, and I'll share the first four. Meditate daily on the teachings and life of Jesus. Remember always that the nonviolent movement seeks justice and reconciliation, not victory. Walk and talk in the manner of love, for God is love. Pray daily to be used by God in order that all people might be free. And so you might want to translate some of that language into what you would meditate upon, how you want to be used by the force of creativity and love at the foundation of everything. But for me, what it tells me is how central Martin Luther King's religion was to him, his faith, and how could we call on our commitment and connection to Unitarian Universalism in the same way. In a speech called The Role of the Church in Facing the Nation's Chief Moral Dilemma, which was racism, Martin Luther King said that the end is reconciliation. The end is redemption. The end is the creation of the beloved community. It is this type of spirit and this type of love that can transform opposers into friends. The type of love that I stress here is not eros, a sort of aesthetic or romantic love, not philia, a sort of reciprocal love between personal friends, but it is agape, which is understanding goodwill for all people. It's an overflowing of love which seeks nothing in return. So that is, for Martin Luther King, what it meant. The role of the church is to support that kind of love. The civil rights legend Ruby Sales talks about the importance of Black folk religion. And she contrasts Black folk religion with the Black church. It was the religion of the people. And she says, I was bred on Black folk religion. It was a religion that combined the ideals of American democracy with a theological sense of justice. Our parents were spiritual geniuses who were able to shape a counterculture of Black folk religion that raised us from disposability to being essential players in society. And it also taught us something serene about love. I love everybody. I love everybody. I love everybody in my heart. And so hate was not anything in our vocabulary. So I Love Everybody is a song that civil rights marchers sang. A song from the Black folk religion. And there are more lyrics that say, you can't make me doubt it in my heart. And there's verses that would include things like, you can't make me doubt it. The Klan can't make me doubt it. I love everybody in my heart. I love George Wallace in my heart. I love the state troopers in my heart. So that this was really reinforcing this guiding philosophy of nonviolence. So how do you think about Unitarian Universalism, your congregation? What role does it play for you? Is it a safe sanctuary from a harsh world? Is it a training ground for what it means to live into our best selves? Is it a launching pad to rocket into the world and make a difference? A place to practice for the world that we dream is possible, where we can create an alternative to the world as it is. Unitarian Universalist theologian Mark Morrison Reed says the central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed. So we come here to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. The Reverend Dr. King said that we are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. And in our own Unitarian Universalist principles, we talk about the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And this connectedness, this interdependence, this interbeing is something that we know. We feel it. Why does it hurt when we hear about a tragedy in some other town to people that we've never known? when we just hear about another's suffering? What is that punch in the gut when we see a clear-cut swath of forest, or we read about mass die-offs of coral reefs? It's happening to ourselves, our interdependent selves. So this beloved community, it's the interdependent web of which we are all a part. It's not just the ecological web of life, it's also the interconnections between us as human beings, the interconnections right now over the broadband, the Wi-Fi, the cellular networks, knowing that we are connected to each other, trusting that there are others out there who long for beloved community to create together. And we want to be careful that we don't just think about this beloved community of familiar people that we know. Can we care about the entire beloved community of humanity, the entire beloved community of life? Can we care for the needs of all, not just the needs of all who deserve it? Martin Luther King said that the love of beloved community is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. And we all know this kind of overflowing love. It's built into our biology. As human beings, we come into the world as these helpless infants, expecting to be cared for, needing to be cared for, longing to be cared for, and what do we get? We get love. We get support. We get care. We get our needs met by loving parent figures in our lives. We come into the world freely expressing our needs, trusting that they matter to others, and having them met. And then we grow up in our society, and we start to get socialized into, you know, becoming a proper human being and citizen. And we start to get disconnected from that life energy, from this trust that our needs matter. And we start to learn what, you know, a good child does. And shame and fear start to be a factor in what we decide to do or not do. And this is just what we call raising children, you know, socializing them to be good citizens, normal socialization. But what it steals from us is this inability to really be connected to our own needs, to what we want, to having this internal compass, and to trusting that others care about what's important to us and we care about what's important to them. So we're enrolled in these courses that we didn't register for. We didn't sign up for this training. But our society over hundreds of years, thousands of years, has become this place of separation from ourselves, from each other, from life, from nature, and this attempt to control, and that we need to control because somehow we've come to distrust our basic nature, and we've come to distrust nature as separate from us. So we start to pride ourselves on self-control, on, you know, being in charge of ourselves, in command of ourselves. But how do we overcome some of this? How do we start to cultivate that agape love, that love that just overflows without any expectations? And how does woof play out in this? How do we be together in this community? So there are moments where it's beloved community in that kind of small way of like, ugh, these are my people. I love it here. And I completely celebrate that. We need that in our lives. But it's not always sweet here at woof, is it? It can be spicy with lots of different perspectives, people with different backgrounds, different personalities, different ideas. So it's a good place to practice loving no matter what, because some of those differing perspectives can be hard to hear. Some of those irritating behaviors can vex us. And so we've been trained to have these judgments come up and kind of separate with these judgments. But we can work with those. We can hear ourselves thinking, oh, so-and-so shouldn't be doing that. Can you believe such-and-such was so inappropriate? That is not how we do things around here. But we can be tender with ourselves and tender with our judgments and tune in to what's important to me. What is bothering me? And that's going to give me some insight into what I don't want. And if I stay with that, then I could understand what do I want? And why is that important to me? And in that way, tune in to what we need. Just like when we were babies, we didn't have to learn how. We just could tune into what we need and ask for it. So can we tune into what we need and ask for it and be gentle and tender with ourselves? Here at WOOF, we are learning how to become more conscious of things like unconscious bias and how we've been trained in white supremacy culture, trained to value whiteness and the behaviors associated with whiteness over others. And it's hard work and it's uncomfortable. And sometimes we want to hold back and not make a mistake. And sometimes we've made a mistake and we haven't been greeted and with much care and understanding. So I want to remind us that in these journeys and all of the journeys that we take at WOOF, we're going to make mistakes. And in the realm of racial relations and social justice and looking at all of our identities, we've been trained to prioritize certain people's needs, white people's needs, male needs, all the ways that our society has trained us. We didn't sign up for the course, but it's still getting in there. So let's just trust that it's not our fault. There's no blame, but we can still lean in to understand someone else's experience. Can we hold ourselves with tenderness? Can we hold someone that we might have hurt or harmed unintentionally with tenderness? And can we prioritize them? We want to hold all the people who make the mistakes, the people who are impacted, the whole surrounding community, to this love and tenderness. We want to keep moving forward, and we want to take care of all of us while we're moving forward without shame. We're in a learning space, a space to connect, a space to heal, a space that's comfortable enough that we can actually stretch out to the edges of our comfort zone. We don't want to go so far into discomfort that we get so overwhelmed we can't learn anything. We want to overcome those harsh, right, wrong habits that society has taught us and learn to be tender. Martin Luther King taught us that we can't defeat force with force. Then we're just adding to the habits and patterns of domination and control. The popular phrase, smash the patriarchy, that's not going to work. We can't smash the patriarchy. The patriarchy is what taught us to smash. So we want to counter the patriarchy with something soft, not something hard. We want to experience interdependence. And as we're working through the differences, the spicy things that come up between us, how can we seek to mutually influence each other as we're trying to seek clarity or make decisions? Influence is a soft contrast to control, trying to make things happen, force things through. mutually influencing lets us discover together what could be possible, what could happen, what's important to us, who might be impacted by a decision, how can we listen to what everyone needs, think about how this will play out, not just for the people who are in the room these days, in the Zoom room, making a decision, but all the others who will be affected. The influence is kind of a tricky word because we often hear about it like, you know, I'm going to influence you. If I'm trying to influence you without being willing to be influenced by you, then that's just another form of control. So mutual influence is when we're all open. We say that we come together here at WOOF to plant seeds of inspiration, grow in compassionate community, and bloom with service to the wider world. So let us cultivate our capacity for beloved community here. There's a short poem in our hymnal by Edwin Markham. He drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic. Rebel. A thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. We're all in this same boat together. We have to love all the inhabitants in the whole boat and care about them and their needs because we sink or float together. And let us now join together and sing Blue Boat Home. friends, together may we plant seeds of inspiration, grow in compassionate community, and bloom into beloved community. May it be so. I will extinguish our chalice, and I will not, however, extinguish the inspiration and the hope that we have created here together.